Hello, I'm Simon Fischerbecker, and you're listening to 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast!
APP Services, Lavazzi at boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 212. I'm Adam, and for the moment, I'm on my own. This week, we were going to be recording episode 212 to incorporate our review of City of Death, but unfortunately, and this is the long story, last Monday, Debbie, my wife, went and did one of her jobs as usual, turned up at an old people's home. When she arrived at the old people's home, was asked whether she had any bugs or not, because everybody keeps bringing bugs into the place. Unfortunately, she took hers out of the place, was ill most of the rest of that week, and passed it on to me for Sunday. And I, unfortunately, with nobody else to cover, had to go to work, do a 9-hour shift, feeling very ill and having unspeakables at the other end. Therefore, by the time I got home, I completely crashed out and fell asleep and had not watched City of Death, because I try to watch it over the weekend. Had a wedding to film on Saturday, so a little bit short of time, and I really didn't feel up to it this morning either, so I requested that we postpone it, and we'll be recording that one next week. However, on Thursday evening, myself and Robert were very lucky to be able to chat to Simon Fischerbecker. Unfortunately, there's another story there. Simon had arranged to go online and chat to me at 8 p.m, but me being me, I completely forgot this and got a message on Facebook at 8:30 from him saying, "Ready when you are." Of course, unbeknownst to me, Robert had also been waiting up at about 4 o'clock in the morning for where he is. So I was very fortunate that when I did go online and rush all my equipment together, he was there with me, because unfortunately I was completely unprepared. And this is why I've had to edit this particular interview down, because of the amount of times I completely lost my train of thought. But hopefully you won't notice that on this particular edit. So, here we go. This is myself, Robert Haynes, and, well, the rest is obvious because it's in the recording. So please enjoy, and tune in again next week, of course. I should be saying that at the end of the episode, shouldn't I? Maybe I will. Here goes.
Right, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome onto the show Mr. Robert Haynes. No, I'm only joking. It's Mr. Simon Fischerbecker.
Hello, everybody.
But Robert is here with us.
Hello.
Simon, hello.
Hello.
I hope I haven't kept you waiting too long. Bear in mind, we were supposed to do this at 8 o'clock, and it's now, well, what is it now? Gone 8:30. I do apologise.
No problems at all. You know, I mean, fortunately, I can do this whilst I'm sitting on my sofa. So I was only catching up on emails and things whilst I was waiting. So absolutely fine.
Splendid. Thank God for Facebook. Anyway, right, yes. Yeah, so I know, obviously, you've been involved in quite a lot of events over the last 12 months. Now, I suspect we're going to sort of end up asking you questions you've already been asked eventually. But what I'd like to start off with is basically you talking about the year you've had, really. Obviously, last year, not rather than this year. I'm really interested to hear what you've been up to.
Yeah, well, the last 12 months have been quite extraordinary. And of course, you know, 2013 was the 50th anniversary for Doctor Who. So as well as the usual events, there were lots of one-off events that I was invited to. And I got an opportunity to go down under, as they say. So I was in Sydney, Brisbane and Melbourne in Oz, and got over to Auckland in New Zealand. And then within days of that, I was in Rhode Island and Long Island and Nashville in America. So it was all very exciting.
You must have been confused as to where you were.
I had no idea where I was. what I've learnt about jet lag is my brain knows the local time and is quite comfortable with the local time. But my body, for my entire 7 weeks away, just remained in UK time. It was very strange. So I was physically exhausted, mentally blurry at times. But it was all a new, it's all a learning curve for me. But it was very exciting as well at the same time. And I've just learnt, I've just got to survive on fatigue.
So what's your, what's your lasting memories of the anniversary year then, the things that stick in your mind?
Well, I mean, the fact I, because of my association with Doctor Who, I've literally got to travel the world. I've been to places I hadn't been before. On the actual anniversary night itself, I was guest of honour at a cinema in West Sussex in Crawley. So I actually got to see the 50th anniversary on a big screen with all the fans. So that was very exciting. So I absolutely know in 20 years time, when people say, where were you on the 50th anniversary? I'll be able to say I was at Cineworld in Crawley. and because of my association with Doctor Who, I've got to do lots and lots of other things as well. So, 2013 was extraordinary. And, I put together my own one man show.
Excellent.
Called My Dalek Has a Puncture. I did it in Australia and it was very well received. I did it in New Zealand. They loved it. I did it in America. That was, went down a storm there as well. So that's given me the courage to put on a UK tour.
Excellent.
So that all starts on the 4th of April. I'm in Stevenage.
I'm so disappointed they didn't arrange a performance on the Isle of Wight, which would have helped me out.
Well, I could let you know it was not without the want of trying.
Oh, good. I'm glad it figured in your thoughts.
Yes, but no, I'd be very happy to do something at the Isle of Wight.
Yes, please. They all miss us out, you know.
If anyone can help me find a venue on the Isle of Wight, it'd be much appreciated.
Oh, good. Well, we've got Shanklin Theatre.
It's because it was a very interesting exercise because in America and Australia, with the events I went to and I did the show, they all knew who I was, and so I was treated quite royally. But in the UK, I freely admit I'm not a household name, but to sci-fi fans, the character I play, Dorian, is huge. Yeah. So contacting some venues, they didn't know who the hell I was, and so they were a bit sceptical. Mm. So because I didn't have anything on video, because it's my first tour, it was a bit of a challenge. But I've got 11 dates. Ooh. So people go to
Are these lovely dates on, in Great Britain?
Well, if you go to my website, fisherbecker.info, all the details are there. But basically it's Stevenage, Lewisham, Herne Bay, Sudbury in Suffolk, Lincoln, Barking, Blackburn, Doncaster, Chippenham, and Whitley Bay.
Whitley Beer.
So
you're sort of travelling gradually away from the Isle of Wight during the whole tour, so you need to sort of add a few dates at the beginning.
And there is a chance of an event in Bournemouth, but
that's quite close.
Yeah, but nothing's been confirmed yet. It's been a very interesting exercise because the venues where the where the administrators were sci-fi or Doctor Who fans, they knew exactly who I was and they booked it straight away with not wanting any information at all. Some other venues I needed to do a bit of a sales pitch, but I expected to do that and I had all my stuff to do. And they still booked. But others, and the vast majority, were quite snooty.
Yeah.
I have to say. Yeah, quite snooty. But never mind. I'll just charge them twice as much.
Yes.
when they actually could come. That's the way. This is very much a learning curve for me. And the response, there is My Dalek Has a Puncture fan art page that's got a competition on it.
Yes.
So that's generating all sorts of interest. So it's promising to be a hoot.
Excellent. I'm just disappointed I'm not going to get to see any of it. I wouldn't have thought, because obviously getting off the Isle of Wight costs a fortune.
As I say, it will be extended to 2015. To be honest, I already have I have two dates already for 2015.
Oh, good.
And so if I can get to the Isle of Wight as well, that would be lovely.
Yep. Whether it be the Frank Shanklin Theatre or Medina Theatre or the Apollo
wherever.
Theatre.
It's whoever better. Wants. Yeah. Yes, you know, it's whoever wants me. It's absolutely fine.
Good. Right. Let's hope somebody who's listening might be able to work. Probably not, actually. Nobody in the Isle of Wight listens to this podcast. They're all in America. Oh, and some in Australia.
Well, you never know. There's all sorts of people listen to these podcasts. Because I know myself when I go around, people say, oh, they heard me on this and they heard me on that.
Oh, yeah, plenty of people listen to the show, but not many of them on the Isle of Wight, which is what I want, really. Yes.
Never mind.
So what's obviously you've got this tour plans. What else have you got in the pipeline?
Last year, filmed a pilot for a new comedy series for the BBC called Puppy Love, written by Joe Scanlon and Vicky Pepperdine, and the BBC have commissioned it to go to series, and we start filming in May, and it's due for broadcast on BBC 4 in the autumn. So that's very exciting.
Oh, good. How many BBC episodes? 4 stays on the telly.
There's 6 episodes for its first series.
Yes.
And on BBC 4, Joe Scanlon and Vicky Pepperdine wrote Getting On with Joe Brand. And I did an episode of Getting On. They seemed to like what I did. And so they invited me on to Puppy Love. So there's Sanjeev Bashkar and Tobias Menzies as well. So it's all very exciting.
Oh, excellent stuff. That sounds really, really good. So going back in time to the days of Doctor Who, which I mean, you first appeared. Did you not first appear at the sort towards the end of Matt Smith's first series?
Yes, the Pandorica opens
was the one scene. So, oh, good. At least you got another few scenes after that one scene then.
Oh, yes. But originally with the Pandorica opens, that was it. That was all Dorian was going to be.
Mm. And then they decided that that'd be a good sort of opportunity to cut someone's head off, and unfortunately had to be yours.
It would all develop from that, really, to be honest. And it's been very, very exciting. And because I've done... have I done more episodes, but each time when Doran appears, there's something new about him. And so he's become this sort of complicated and convoluted character, which has intrigued the fans. And so that's why I get invited all over the world to do things. It's quite extraordinary.
It's a bit of a shame, really, because obviously looking back at the episode in which your head became departed from its shoulders. it put together a little team of co-stars that have sort of, you know, had a few episodes together and apparently going to have some more in Madame Vastra and Jenny and Strax.
Strax.
So you still, that helped me out there, Robert. You're going, and I think at the time I thought you would have completed a little quartet of... characters like that would have worked quite well.
Well, there was talk, because it was mentioned in the Doctor Who magazine, there was talk of the Barmy Army, which Dorian was part of. Now, how serious that article was, I have no idea, but it was definitely there, so that's why I can tell you. But, you know, with these things, it's up to Stephen Moffat or the powers that be. I've let it be known that if they want to have Dorian again, and that I would like to continue being Dorian. But, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's up to others.
But, of course, Doctor Who being Doctor Who and Dorian being blue, and that's not supposed to be a poem, but it turned out that way. Of course, you could play another character that isn't sort of bald and blue.
Oh, it absolutely. Could be your
But also, I mean, anything's possible on Doctor Who.
Yes. Of course.
Spot on. That's exactly what I was going to say. Yes. Sci-fi generally, anything can happen. But with Doctor Who in particular, anything, absolutely anything can happen. And things can be changed quite easily with just a sentence.
Yep.
Yes, indeed.
That's very true.
Very well. And then it can be changed back again.
Indeed.
With the same sort of flippant sentence that people seem to hang on to quite a lot in Doctor Who. The slightest... wording or mispronunciation seems to matter so much to certain people who actually watched the show.
I was going to ask about your makeup. Yes. How? What kind of stuff did they put on to make you blue?
To be honest, it was ordinary body paint. Whatever the make was, it was number 37. I just happened to see the number 37 emboldened on the tube. It was water based, so it was quite easy to get off. Although it did get into my pores and my skin, so for about a week afterwards, the shower water had a slight blue tint. I was very lucky because, I mean, you mentioned Strax. Poor old Dan Starkey has to be in the chair for hours.
Yes. Because there's such a big prosthetic that he has to wear.
Well, obviously he likes doing it because he does it an awful lot.
Yes.
Well, you know. I mean, the bank manager encourages us all to go on stuff here.
Is there anything that you were privy to that obviously was part of the plot that you had to keep secret, and it was really difficult keeping a secret that you knew about, like major things in the storyline. Is there anything like that happened at all during your time on the show?
No, I mean, everything is very secret, and so you do tend to keep shtum. Though I must admit, in one of my very first interviews, I sort of fell into a slight trap in that I got quite relaxed. And one of the questions was, who was the best person you met whilst you were filming? And one of the people I mentioned was Mark Gatiss. See, and this interview was when I just finished doing A Good Man Goes to War.
Yes.
And it was just the way the interviewer then said, but Mark Gatiss is in episode 13. You see, so, and of course, I sort of let the cat out of the bag that I was then going to be in episode 13.
Oops.
You see, so, and I thought, oh, shite. You know? but I just said, oh, he just appeared on set and was, because quite a few actors who've got nothing to do with the episode you're in, if they're at the studios, they'll just come in and watch the filming.
So, you get told off?
Nobody told me off. No, nobody told me off. But,
have there ever been any like, tellings off on set? You know.
But then I haven't been asked back either.
Oh dear.
So, no, there's no telling off or anything like that. It's actually, it's very relaxed. It's a very friendly family feeling.
Yeah.
Working on Doctor Who. I mean, everybody has their own task, and they're all expected to do it at a very, very high standard. So that's the only pressure. But otherwise, it's extremely friendly, as well as the actors, everybody behind the scenes. And I've got to give it to Stephen Moffat at the read-through, for example, of A Good Man Goes to War. At the end of the read-through, we were still sat in the boardroom, and he went round the table, and he gave us all about 10 minutes each. He just sort of chatted.
That's nice.
You know, and when you consider how busy he must be, as well as the pressures he must be under, the fact that he gave us each 10 minutes or so, it really showed the real quality of the man, and sort of emphasises why we all feel we're part of a big, big family.
That's nice to hear.
It is indeed. Yeah. I was just thinking, it surprises me in a large group of people, but obviously I work with a large group of people, and there's always moments of tension, and but it sounds to me like that there's never any sort of arguments on Doctor Who, any sort of people shouting at each other and stuff like that.
I've not been aware of it.
No.
But then I'm not around all the time, you know, so, but I've not been aware of it, and to be honest, I haven't really heard any rumours either, so... I think as they work on a tight timetable. It's a sort of 11 or 12 day fortnight.
Yeah.
So everybody's really just focusing on getting the job done. And because everybody's so expert at what they do, the job does get done. See, frustrations come in when things either go wrong or they break or somebody hasn't done what they said they were going to do. or things have to be changed because it wasn't thought through properly in the first place. Well, with Doctor Who, everything, when it comes to the point of filming, everything is very well thought through. So from an actor's point of view, we know exactly what is expected of us. And there is this feeling as an actor that you must get it right every time. The filming is very much a technical medium, and they don't really like to take, you know, extra shots, particularly in television, unless they really have to. And by really have to is, you know, something's gone wrong with the camera, a light's gone pop, or something's fallen off, you know. So the, so each time there's a take, there's the pressure of the actor to do as well as they can and sort of get it right every time.
Yeah.
And after a while, you get used to that. So I'm not saying it was difficult or seriously high pressured, but that's always in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was your favourite event, whether that you attended or didn't attend, of the anniversary year? What's the one you enjoyed the most?
Oh, I enjoyed it all. I think the experience of travelling abroad and seeing the absolute appreciation from people from another land is quite extraordinary. And I'm getting used to people referring to me as a celebrity. I haven't quite got myself used to that tag, and I feel awkward about it. And it is very clear that some people are very nervous to talk to me, I'm very sad that they feel that way, and I try and calm them down as best I can. But I can remember myself, very early on in my career, I was very lucky. I got to do a play in the West End with Paul Scofield and Eileen Atkins, and I was absolutely terrified of meeting them, let alone actually doing it.
When was that?
It was 1989, and it was at, well, it was called the Strand Theatre now. I think it's called the Novello Theatre now in the West End. But if you come out of Charing Cross Station and turn right and just keep walking, you come to it. But it was called Exclusive. It was a play written by Geoffrey Archer. And it was just the idea of meeting Paul Scofield. I was very nervous. It took me a lot of courage. I walked around the block of the rehearsal room three times before I took a deep breath. And I said to myself, oh, this is stupid. This is what you want to do. Just take a deep breath and do it. So I did. I just took a deep breath, closed my eyes, opened the door, walked in. When I opened my eyes, the first person I saw was Paul Scofield, who just very, very sweetly came up to me and said, hello. He said, my name's Paul. And that was it. And that's it. So it was a wonderful experience, but terrifying. So now when I meet people and I get the sense that they feel like I did about Paul Scofield, I don't think I'm worthy of that. And I try and keep calm down as soon as possible.
It's funny to say that, because yesterday in the shop I work in, which is Southern Cooperative Cows, no plug meant there, it was just a mention. Anyway, yeah, Chris Packham wandered into the shop, and I said to my colleagues, do you realise Chris Packham's just walked in? And one of the girls works in the shop said, oh, I remember going to a really wild show, road show, in Bristol. So I walked up to Chris Packham and said, hello, are you Chris Packham? He said, yes. You always ask that question of celebrities, even though you know it's them, you can't quite believe it is. So you have to ask them if they are them.
Yeah, no, I will admit sometimes, a celebrity doesn't quite look how you would imagine.
Because they're three-dimensional. You always see them in 2D, don't you, most of the time on television.
That's right. I mean, in my case, I'm not surprised that people don't really notice me too much.
Why, because you're not blue?
Because I'm not blue and I have hair.
Anyway, back to Chris Packham. Yeah, so I said, I would like to partake in winding up one of my colleagues. Just pretend you remember seeing her when she was 3 years old at this thing in Bristol. He wasn't up for that, and just wanted me to show him where the tuna snacks were. So that was the end of that particular encounter.
People have to eat, Adam.
Oh, yeah, no, sorry. It's quite tall, actually. Anyway, yes, I was just thinking, or wondering, I should say. You're talking about, obviously, people sometimes being a bit starstruck when they meet you. Is there anybody that you met during the Doctor Who events that you were delighted to get the chance to meet, or you felt a little bit starstruck by?
Oh, no, no. I mean, one of the treats for me is I get to meet my heroes, and I get a bit fanny as well. Who did I meet? William Shatner.
Love to meet him. He's a laugh.
Peter Jurassic and Stephen Furze from Babylon 5. I mean, it was it's absolutely fantastic to meet people. My little story about William Shatner, I met him at Salt Lake City, and he walked past my table to get to his table for the signings, and he stopped and he turned around again, and of course there's me. I took a deep took in a deep breath, and also my Cure fans, we all took a deep breath, and I'm thinking, oh my God, that's William Shatner coming to me. What am I going to say? Anyway, he came up, he looked at my table with my photos, he looked at the poster on the wall behind me, and he just said, "So you're the Blue Man," he said. So I said, "Well, yes," I said, "and most people know think of you as Captain Kirk, but I preferred you in Boston Legal." And he sort of clicked his finger and pointed at me and winked. And then he did exactly the same to my cue. He looked at them, clicked his finger, pointed them, and walked away. And as he did, they all followed him. And I thought, you bastard. You weren't interested. You weren't interested in me. You were interested in me. Well, I mean, fortunately, there were more people, and in fact, that cue came back to me, so it was all right. But those things, it's great fun. It's absolute great fun meeting people.
Yeah.
And I can break the ice now, because I can go up to one of my heroes, and I do feel very nervous at first. But I could just introduce myself and say, and I follow it by saying, "And I'm here because of Doctor Who." And some of them know exactly who I am, and that blows my brain. But that sort of breaks the ice. It's very good fun, and most of them are absolute sweet and lovely.
Yeah, but some aren't. Ooh, I shall listen about the ones that aren't.
Well, I mean, you hear rumours, but I haven't had any bad experiences that I can think of. No, I think those who've got their head up their ass wouldn't want to come and see me anyway. Mm. So that's why I don't get to see them.
Of course, when you said known as the Blue Man, it always reminds me of that band, the Blue Men.
With the
drums,
yes,
and stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
I wonder if that's where the inspiration came from.
They came over here too.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I seem to have remember them having one record. Yeah. Sorry, Robert. Yes.
I was going to say, Simon, one thing that you're guaranteed, anybody who's been in Doctor Who is assured of recognition well beyond the time that they actually did their episodes.
Yes, even so, before manager.
I accept that.
Ongoing. Yeah, because you're part of history now.
Yeah.
And,
that's the weird feeling. That is, I will admit that. That is the weird feeling, clearly, and it is part of history. And the number of fan projects that use my lines in their projects.
I'm just checking about some. You got involved in a fan adventure or something, The Curse of Sleepy Hollow.
Oh my gosh! Yes, I got involved with that. Yes, I got involved with quite a few things. I mean, basically, on my Facebook page, if I'm online, these people pop up and they say, "Will you do? Will you do?" Yeah. And you know, if I'm available, you know, and you know, I've got the time, and I don't have to sort of go out of my way too much, I think, why not? Why not? So, it keeps me fine tuning my craft, and it's giving them a little bounce. I have noticed that a lot of youngsters who are trying things out and learning, they're on their learning curve. The fact that I'm involved keeps them going.
Yes, yeah.
And also tries to encourage them to try and improve themselves more. So if in that small way I can help them build their skill, then I'm quite chuffed to be involved.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, I'm not always available. And I try and keep on top of everything, but sometimes I've had to let people down.
Yeah, so I can,
but if I can just use your medium just to apologize to anyone that I promised to do something and I haven't yet got round to it.
You promised to give us 500 quid or something. I seem to remember.
I'd remember that.
Or maybe forget
so
it.
What I will say to anyone, if I have promised to sort of do a voiceover or something for them and I haven't got round to it, please feel free to nudge me. I don't mind being nudged. But as long as you're polite with it, you know. If they give me a timetable to it, I mean, I did two or three things this morning, for example, because I had a couple of hours free. So, that made me sort of catch up on it. And to be honest, I thoroughly enjoy it. And the standard of a lot of the writing is excellent.
I've also noticed you've done a couple of Big Finish, audios.
Yes.
That?
Absolutely wonderful. I have to thank Gary Russell, really, because I've been writing to Big Finish for years, but they haven't sort of picked me up at all. I bumped into Gary Russell and he offered me a couple of extraordinary roles, really. He contacted me. He said, I've just read the script and there's a character in it. And as soon as I got through it, I thought the best person to do this would be you, Simon. Uh-huh. It was to play a psychotic elevator. So,
was that in the Iris Ride Time one?
Yeah, that's the, a lift in time. It's called Iris World Time. And then they called me back a few months later to play, Science Minister Caval. In Gallifrey 5.
Gallifrey 5, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's chapter 17, but I can't remember now.
Well, I've noticed that a lot of people who do Big Finish, they end up coming back for repeated, as a different person, because being an audio medium, you can put on voices, etc. You can play different characters. So a lot of people, I think, get going with the Big Finish story. So... maybe you've got more work coming that way as well, so.
Well, I very much hope to, and you know, they only need to call.
Well, I look forward to listening to those now that I know that you're in them.
Didn't you want to listen to them
It's a fascinating setup they've got. The studios are wonderful. You go into this very
like this
small
one, actually,
studio.
Funny you should say that. Sorry.
Yeah, go to this very small studio, but there are five or six little cubicles that you sit in.
Yes.
Sort of horseshoe shape.
So everybody's in separate ones, aren't they?
That's right. Yeah, and it's very good. And the catering there is fantastic. And it really is worth it. And you're there. I have to say, it's a medium that I really enjoy, but I find I can only really last for about 3 hours. I feel if I did a 5 or 6 hour day doing it, I'd be exhausted. It's quite surprising. Yeah, it's quite surprising how physical doing audio is.
Yeah.
Do you actually do like I know when I'm on Skype I'm gesticulating with my hands.
It's really shameful. Do apologise about that, listeners. Robert, rather not do that. Gesticulating. Sorry.
It is exactly that. You become more physical because in front of a camera to let people know what's going on, you've got your body, your facial expressions, well as your voice. But with audio, you've only got your voice. So to get your voice to put over what you're trying to say or do and the meaning of something, and in some cases, the hidden meaning, that you do find that you are quite physical and it can get quite tense. And that's something I've learned, you know. I know I did audio at college, but you know, you only did a term of that, but to actually do it, it's quite fantastic.
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, I love the audio stuff. I just find that it's very creative and a lot of people seem to enjoy it.
Yes.
It's a lot of freedom, I think, involved in it. So, yeah, great stuff.
Well, one of our co-presenters, Reese Barton, who has got a book coming out called Reese Barton's Book of Excuses. has very kindly supplied us with a new excuse for why he can't come on to this particular... When I just invited him about 5 minutes ago, he said, sadly, I can't. I'm just checking Facebook. It must be a new social media facility. while getting ready for a lecture. I mean, what time is it in Australia at the moment?
For him, it would be 7:06.
So he's going to have a lecture around 7:06 in the morning. Okay, well, carry on. Anyway, I'm about to head off, which makes me kind of grumpy now. What, because he's heading off or because he didn't find a decent enough excuse not to come on the show?
That's one
free entry there from Rhys Barton's soon to be released book of excuses. Anyway, right. So, where were we up to? Sorry, I got slightly distracted there. I thought he'd like to come on and speak to you, Simon. I think it's a bit rude, actually.
Well, never mind. Yeah. I probably wouldn't have much to say to him anyway.
It's quite interesting to note that Kirby borrowed one of his excuses, didn't he? Some ridiculous thing about going to have to pick up his daughter from college or something like that. I don't know. And Mary, what was her excuse? It's 5 hours behind in America, isn't it? It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I can't remember where it's. Oh, she's at work.
Yeah, it would be. It would be 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah.
Yes. So there
I
you
think
go.
Kirby could make it in time. Even if he tried to do it from McDonald's or something.
Yeah. I think, you know, Simon, one of the first sort of guests we had on the show while all this sort of group of co-presenters was on was Louise Jameson. And I didn't tell them she was coming on the show. So I did the normal introductions to the show. And
I wish you did, Adam.
And Louise Jameson. Everybody went, oh. And Kirby went, oh, my. And it led to lots of hilarity. And fortunately, Ben Shoveler, who was a co-presenter on the show at the time, was able to, because he's a seasoned radio presenter, was able to take over and ask lots of silly questions. But I quite enjoyed that.
No, Adam, yes? The thing is, if I'd known, I'd just come out of hospital that very day,
right,
trying to recover from my major operation.
Yes.
And
this is another one from Robert's book of excuses. Go on, sorry. I'm only joking, mate.
If I'd known, I would have come on.
Yes, okay. But it was fun. I quite enjoyed it.
So that's why I said, you know, Simon Fisher-Beck is coming on.
Yes.
I am going to stay awake.
Yes.
So I can have a chat.
That's nice.
Well, I very much appreciate it. I feel quite bad now that you're up at such hour, but you've got the rest of the day to recover, hopefully.
No, he won't. He'll stay up. He won't go to bed.
No. I do this on occasions for the podcast anyway, so it's just great to chat with a lot of different people who've been involved in various many things. I find it quite interesting.
I nearly got in there, Robert.
No, I just wanted to ask, yes? Is that your cat that you've got as your profile on your wallpaper on your Facebook
page?
Yes,
it's SGC. Yeah, SGC, which is short for Small Ginger Cat. He adopted us. He appeared in the kitchen one summer, and we tried to ignore him, but he kept on coming back. And one day I picked him up and he was just bag of skin and bone, put down a saucer of milk, and it was like milk, and it was just like Tom and Jerry, just and that's it. And he's very sweet, but we are clearly his servants now.
Mm. Well, that's the way with cats.
He gives an enormous amount of pleasure.
Yeah,
I'm very fond of him.
What about the cat?
thank you.
Sorry, I had to get that one in. So I have to ask this question. It's a bit of a silly question. It's the sort of question you might get off Multicoloured Swap Shop many years ago. If you hadn't become an actor, what would you have? What do you see yourself having become?
Well, when I was at school, my ambition was to be a music and biology teacher.
Wow.
but I was no good at chemistry, so that sort of floundered quite early on.
You and me both.
And I don't know really, because at school, I will admit, I had no real focus of what I actually wanted to do. To be an actor, the first time I did any sort of acting was when the music teacher, came back from the summer break, and he just announced, he said, at Christmas, the music and drama department are going to get together and put on a production of Oliver, and you, my little fat friend, are going to be Mr. Bumble. Right. And that was it. That was it. And I was a bit more shy than I am now, and timid, and I didn't want to upset the music teacher, because he was I won't say a mentor, but he was a chap I did respect a lot. So I went along with it, and I was terrified at first, but I found that in rehearsal, I actually found I could do it quite easily. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't hard work, but some of it was very easy to do. Mm. And then people started commenting that I was doing extremely well. And then when we did the performance, the praise and the was quite extraordinary. It's something, yeah. And I would admit, you know, it was a big ego massage. But I still never really seriously thought of becoming a professional actor. But now that I am, I can absolutely tell you, it's absolutely what I do.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But if I wasn't an actor, if the things changed, I would probably be a communicator of some sort.
Mm.
I'm actually, you know, blow my own trumpet. I'm actually quite a good teacher.
Yeah.
Another hat that I've worn in the past is I'm qualified. I've got an HR qualification, human resources. And part of that is giving training courses. So technically I'm a qualified teacher.
Yeah.
So I'm sure communication and teaching would be something I would fall into.
Excellent. That's good. What a good answer. It's a bit similar to Nick Briggs's answer, actually. When
I have to say that. I sounded very serious, didn't it?
There's nothing wrong with being serious time and again. Hey, well,
I'm terribly sorry. I have to blow a raspberry.
No, we used to listen to those sort of sounds with Roberts on the show anyway. So that's not a problem.
Can't be serious for more than 10 minutes a day.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Best way to be.
How my show came about. Shall I tell you that?
That'd be good. Hey, Robert, why don't you ask Simon how his show came about?
I would be interested to know how your show came about, because I remembered seeing on various different Facebook sites you promoting it. I'm thinking, this was interesting. What's this about?
It wasn't on ours as well. I'm pretty sure you promoted it on ours. Somewhere
along. As you know, at the conventions, there are panels. And normally I go on a panel with other Doctor Who actors when we're at these conventions. But there were one or two conventions where I was the only Doctor Who person there. And you have an interviewer who interviews you, and then they open up a Q&A. To the crowd, which is absolutely lovely. But there were a couple of times where the interviewer didn't turn up, and then everybody else was too scared to interview me. So I was just led to this empty stage and told, and there are your lions, you know. So I started off by just saying a little bit about myself. It only lasted about 10 minutes, and then I went out and to the Q&As. And then over time, people started asking me if I'd got an autobiography. And they were asking more questions they wanted to know more about me other than Doctor Who. So that's when I thought, I know, I'll have up my sleeve is my own personal panel. And instead of having an interviewer, I'll have a slideshow. And the slideshow is just a series of pictures, mainly for me to let me know how to move on in the story.
Yep.
But I would make it autobiographical. So it's a story of how I became an actor. Because the four main questions I'm asked are, how did you become an actor? I want to be an actor. What do I have to do?
Yes.
Do you bring anything of yourself to Dorian? And Dorian is such a complicated character. How is it that you are able to play a complicated character so effortlessly? Those are the four main questions I've put, and I make that the core of the discussion I have. I found also that people find the way I talk very funny.
It's funny, so that. Don't you say that?
Yeah, I'd be talking quite seriously, and they'd burst out laughing.
Yes.
So there is.
It's a talent, that is.
Yeah, and my family background is very complicated indeed. So that's how I address the subject about Dorian being complicated. So I tell a bit about my family, and you know, you ask me what I wanted to do before I became an actor, and then I tell them how it was I came about to be an actor, and then I talk about the tools of the trade. Yeah. And so it's a chat that's educational, really. And the best review I had was something along the lines, a natural raconteur who moves effortlessly from one hilarious anecdote to another.
Excellent.
So that's it. And it really has gone down a storm. And when people go to my website, fisherbecker.info.
Yes, I'm in it right now.
Yeah. Well, if you go
it's
to
very
the
easy
one
to
man,
find.
Yeah. If you go to the one man show page, you will see at the bottom there is a review by a young lady in New Zealand. And
I could see that.
Yeah. So you could read it out if you wish.
Yes, you could, Robert, couldn't you?
I will. It says, "My Dalek has a puncher, a great name, and an even better show. Loved by humans the world over as Dorian Maldivar, Simon Fisher-Becker's one-man show offers a wonderful insight into the man behind the character. His dramatic story of the horrific incident that eventually led to his securing the role in Doctor Who was very touching and a great lesson in finding the silver lining during the dark times in your life. One of the most poignant reviews of this show was a simple, Simon has given me my confidence back. Although at times deeply moving and thought-provoking, Simon's show is mostly a light-hearted romp through the crazy and hilarious world of a working actor, a must-see event suitable for all ages." And that's from Carolyn Timarkos, New Zealand, or Timarkos.
Yes.
However you would pronounce her name.
Yes, we do get some.
So there
people,
you go. I need
it's
not say
very
it
nice.
Yes.
Yes.
Very nice.
It's funny you should say about people asking you the same questions and things. I always try and not ask questions that other people have asked. It's very difficult, that, you know.
It is very difficult. And to be honest, I have a Q&A session after the show, and that actually has turned out to be quite short, because most of the questions people would want answers to, I've answered.
Can I ask a question then that you wouldn't have been asked? Is what question would you like to be asked?
Grief. Well, I thought you were going to say, what are the lottery numbers for Saturday or something silly?
I was going to say it would be, I'd like to know, you know, what the lottery numbers are next Saturday.
Well, I'm in the future, so I should be able to probably tell you, but it doesn't work that way.
Alas.
I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
So, Simon, what do you watch on telly then, other than Doctor Who, of course?
I'm going to say something that's going to upset people. Oh, I don't actually watch much telly.
No.
But when I do, well, there are programs which I will sit and watch, like Doctor Who.
Yes, of course.
There are other programs I like to just observe. So I'll be doing my emails or something and it's on, so I can say. And I do like a lot of the detective series. You know, as daft as that sounds. I like anything sci-fi because for me, sci-fi, there's always a plausibility, no matter how ludicrous the situation you are in. There is actually still a plausibility about it. And also it brings in more imagination. And I think it's very important that imagination is given an airing, because it's the imagination of yesterday that becomes the reality of today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, oh dear, that sounded too serious.
Robert, for goodness sake, you just can't take him anywhere.
So I watch a lot of sci-fi. I watch a lot of cop shows. I love history.
Oh, me too.
I mean, But a lot of history, when you actually sit and listen to it, is speculation. They don't really know. There's very few that I would say are hard facts. And, you know, even today, we living today don't really know exactly what's going on in the corridors of power at all. We could all speculate, and we might find something out in 30 years' time. So how we know what was going on 500 years ago? We know there was a battle, but I really don't believe we really understand why the battle took place half of the time. So it would be quite good to have the TARDIS and go back and see.
It would indeed, absolutely. I mean, obviously, they do these little mini-pods, don't they?
You know, I love educational programs. I love the sort of David Attenborough stuff. But it all depends what frame of mind I'm in. But I go to the theatre a lot. I go to the cinema a lot. And if I'm working, you work all the hours, and you never see any telly at all. When I finish filming in a period, I then get back and just try and catch up on stuff that's been recorded. Yeah. And some stuff I never actually get to see.
I get that as well, to be honest with you. We've got things, I've got Silent Witness from about 3 months ago still sitting on the bus. Eventually get to watch them.
I like a few quiz shows, but I don't, I watch in spits and spurts. Very few things. I mean, there's Sherlock and there's Doctor Who. I'm currently, a series I'm enjoying in the UK is Silk. Mainly because they've introduced a character played by my good friend Francis Barber, who was Madame Barber.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have to admit, when I did my scene with Francis, I was terrified. She was another example. I was thinking, oh my God, this is Francis Barber. I can't cock this up.
Was it her character or herself?
Yeah, well, I've seen Frances on stage in such powerful roles, and I've respected her for years, you know, and I've seen her in a few telly things, and I've just always thought that, you know, she's a spot on actress, and it's good to see her in Silk. She's playing quite a nasty barrister, which is wonderful. But there you go. So I always try and watch stuff if I know a friend is in it. Well, one, they're bound to ask me, did you see it? And so I feel, you know.
Yeah, of course, yes, yes.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, after all, I'd like people to see me when I'm in something. So if I know they're in something, then I'll make a point of watching it.
Yeah, why not? I was just thinking, actually, obviously Dorian ended up with his head in a box. I noticed also
there were upside down.
Yeah, there was lots of other heads that had sort of decomposed. Is that likely to happen to Dorian, or was he just going to be able to be a talking head like that for the rest of time?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think that he'll be around for a long time, but as I say, it's up to Moffat and Co.
It did rather intrigue me that. My
personal opinion is that Dora will probably come back at some point, but when, I have no idea.
The only thing I didn't like about that was
the fans are so intrigued. The fans are so intrigued with Dora, for which I'm very grateful. And there are so many questions to answer, you know. And you know, if it's not this series, it could be another. On a personal basis, I'd love to go head to head. No pun intended. With Peter Capaldi,
yes,
it would just. I would be quaking in my boots. I admit, but it would be lovely to tick that one off.
So the only thing I didn't really like about that whole thing is the Doctor Who, the repeating of the words Doctor Who at the end of that episode. It's a little bit annoying. Not your fault, obviously, because you didn't write that particular bit of dialogue, but it was just a bit.
I think it's getting grating. It's getting
at the
an
time.
Old gag.
Yeah, yeah.
About, I mean, even looking, I think we watching the Gunfighters and old William Hartnell one, and he was saying, what was it, Dr. Caligari? And he says, Doctor Who? And he says, yes, indeed. Yeah. So, you know, it gets a bit wearying after a while when it's, you know.
It's used too much, yes.
Yeah, overused. Yeah, cliches.
Well, all I can say, I'm very grateful to be given that line. I must admit.
No, it wasn't your bit of it. It was when Matt Smith was in the TARDIS going, Doctor Who, and he's right. dancing around and going, Doctor Who.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, I was punching the air going, yes. and Dorian has had a few references as well, so I punched the air again. So, because the Handles, who was in the Christmas special, the Doctor picked him up at the Moldavar Market.
That's it, yes.
And a friend of mine texted me and said, "So you've got a market?" So I text back, "Apparently so."
I always thought that the little black marketeering that that Dorian was doing, first of all with River Song, I believe, was a sort of a market, black market, but still a market.
Just goes to show what Simon was saying about the new layers added to the character. So you're getting this character development when you're not even on the show.
Indeed.
It's quite interesting the fact that it was mentioned. At least the fact that it was mentioned, it's still in Stephen's mind.
And at the end of series 7, the Doctor says, "Dorian told me." And as I heard that, I went and punched the air again.
Just goes to show you're still in the thick of things. Yeah. Which obviously can lead to you returning, very much so.
Yes, maybe it's Dorian's son or something.
Yes, you never know. Or his twin.
Yes.
Or his clone.
Genetic twin. Yes. Yep.
Or perhaps put a different frock on and a wig and I could come back as my mother.
Or you could come back as an evil version of Dorian, maybe. That'd be quite interesting.
Ah, well, see, we don't yet know whether he is good or bad.
That's true. I think he was good though.
And that's some of the intrigue for the fans.
So what you'd say is obviously you've done a few scenes in a few episodes. What's the favourite scene that you were involved in?
You got to remember, I'm a fan who's ended up in the show, so everything I did was wonderful. But I have to say the scene with Francis Barber, I really enjoyed that. But then the whole time I spent with my head in the box with Matt Smith was fantastic. Matt is a lovely, sweet guy. Initially, very shy until he gets to know you. And then he becomes very cheeky, very witty. But he's extremely, he's just polite and lovely and nice. We talked about football.
Stop snoring, also, Kirby. Sorry, Kirby. Kirby, our Cobra Centre snores.
When they were filming me with my head in the box.
Oh yes.
Each time they were to take a take, they would close the lid, and then he would slide it open. And on a couple of occasions, they went ready. So as they do, they closed the lid. And then went off and had a confab. And then it got very hot in it. And then suddenly there'd be Matt going, "Oh my lord, we've left Simon and Leoma. Hello matey, how are you?" And then he sort of cod told everybody off, "You mustn't get, you know." But it was a wonder, the whole thing. On a personal emotional thing, which I didn't expect, when I first saw the TARDIS, the blue box, suddenly became very emotional. I didn't expect that at all. Yeah. And I found myself putting my hand out to touch it.
It's an icon.
But it took me by surprise. I didn't expect that feeling at all. But there we go.
I think I'd feel that way, to be honest with you. I mean, I always get a bit of
camaraderie with everybody and all the actors and, Dan and Neve and Catherine.
Yeah.
It was just lovely. And the makeup team. It was just a lovely, lovely time. Hard work, tiring work, but a lovely time.
So did you, were you ever informed as to what race or species that Dorian was?
There's been no discussion.
No, that's a shame, because I need some facts in my new book. And that would be quite a useful one to have.
Maybe it'll come out another time.
Yeah, that's a shame. I mean, I've got to do 101 facts about Doctor Who. I've done 69. And they've got to be quite interesting facts. Not an old sort of thing, you say. And I thought that.
Well, maybe the planet is a rainbow.
No, it's got to be a fact, not a There's no idea.
Oh, you want a fact?
Yes.
No, the fact is there is Dorium. That's a fact.
Yes. Okay. I'll work on that one then. Yeah, sorry, I get so engrossed in listening to you that it completely distracts me from what I'm
talking. Yeah, no. I'm a terrible source of information for you. Because
no, it's not a terrible source, it's a good source.
Because I rarely gossip. Mm. I overhear things, but then I don't have the capacity to remember it. But I've also been a victim of gossip. Over the years, which you'll find out about when you come to my show, my Dalek has a puncture. Over the years, I've been a victim of gossip because suddenly gossip becomes fact and there is no way that you can reverse that. So that's why naturally I tend not to get involved with gossip because I know how much harm it potentially could do. And as I say, with filming, it's always very secret unless they tell you. I mean, for example, with Puppy Love, I've asked them because I said, you know, at these conventions, I'm always asked, what are you doing next? And you've asked that question. And I have asked them, can I let people know? And they said, yes, by all means. So with Puppy Love, I can tell you everything that I know, which is very little. With Doctor Who, it is I don't think there is anything in your contract to tie your tongue, but I think it's just generally understood that you don't talk.
Yeah. So what's Puppy Love about anyway?
Well, the title is based on the fact that the main character, character called V, runs a doggy training centre. So that's why it's Puppy Love. And I play her wife. I play her husband. She's my wife. Freudian slip there.
Yes. Now, you see, you sort of mentioned earlier on that you chatted to Matt about football. Now, before I ask a question about football, we normally got Kirby and Matthew on the show that whenever there's any sports references, do a very rude and ignorant snore. So yeah, they're not here now. So I'm taking this opportunity to ask you about football.
Good on you, Adam.
Okay, you can ask whatever you like. I cannot guarantee an answer.
No, it's not going to be like a quiz question. It's just what's your football team or what is it about football that you might like?
Well, I have to say, I used to play rugger, so I'm more of a rugger chappy. But Tony, my other half, he's the one who's got me into football.
And who does he?
And so I can now tell you, or I have an understanding of what the offside rule is. And I can tell you that we're watching a good or a bad game, or whether it's a boring game, and you will hear me occasionally go, 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 go. And I go, that's a dive.
At least you don't do what my wife does and go, kick it, yes, kick so, it.
Locally, our team is Crystal Palace, so really we should sort of support Crystal Palace.
Actually, my wife's granddad was a Crystal Palace fan.
Yeah, whatever team I support, they tend to get relegated. So
well, don't support Southampton, whatever you do.
Yeah, I'd steer clear of me having you as a fan.
Well, try and support someone like Portsmouth. Well, they're already relegated, aren't they? Try and support somebody like, it'd be quite interesting if you could support Manchester United. Particularly interesting.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not snobby about it at all, but I prefer rugby. And, you know, when you see what rugby players have to go through, when the sort of the Nancy boys of the Premier League start crying because their boots come undone.
So much acting, my goodness.
Yes, it's cringe worthy, isn't it?
I'm forever trying to present them with a BAFTA, you know.
I do love football, but I do find it's quite cringe worthy, especially when Ian Wobben decides to fall over and hold his head.
I have a controversial viewpoint about football.
Yes.
In rugby, they have a sin bin, and I think in football, they should introduce it.
I agree.
If anyone is caught diving, and it will be clearly seen, then not only do they get a yellow card, but they'll have a 10-minute sin bin too.
I agree. That's a brilliant plan.
I, I think that would reduce it, because it's quite appalling, and in my book, it's not gamesmanship at all.
It tarnishes the game. However, it can be quite funny.
They need to do that with Australian football too.
Well, do they a bit namby-pamby in Australian football then?
Ah, for sure. Are they? For sure. Just silly things as well. It's like kicking the ball backwards so that it's like keepy off, instead of trying to score goals, which, you know, they score higher goals in Australian rules football. But, nobody takes positions anymore. They all follow the ball around, and the area just gets congested, and nobody kicks it out. They kick backwards to their own team. And it's just like, we're not trying to score any goals. We're just playing keepy off.
Yeah. The thing is about football, I mean, you do, obviously, you do get a lot of, wimps and namby-pamby idiots, you know,
but also you
do get a lot of genuine tough players. But in cricket, you don't get cricket players, do you? They get, you know, the ball's coming at about 200 miles an hour, hits them on the head of the helmet, cuts their lip or whatever. They just obviously they hold their face a little bit, but they can't. Somebody played on with a broken thumb the other day. I mean, you know, that's the main part of your kit is your hand when playing cricket.
Yeah.
You know,
In rugby world, they refer to the Premier League as the what do they call it? The Andrex League. they're far too soft and far too expensive.
Yeah, well, that's not.
And it's a reference to a toilet roll.
Yeah. The trouble is, you know, that makes me think. I'm watching Spurs actually on the telly at the moment playing Benfica, and remembering that player, what was his Fabian? No, one that had the heart attack on the pitch. And, you know, obviously players are sort of falling over when they're not hurt. I mean, that lad obviously generally collapsed and nearly died, you know. And what if a referee decided he was just trying to get a free kick? He'd be dead now, wouldn't he? You know, it's too much of this sort of play acting. And they really do need to stamp down it, because I love football. It's my favourite sport. But I do get rather embarrassed by, you know, this sort of thing going on. Even though, as I've said before, when you watch YouTube compilations of this sort of thing, it is very funny when you see like people what was that player who was somebody kicked the ball at him and it hit him in the midriff and he held his face and landed on the floor. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Ridiculous, isn't it?
And there's another one that made me laugh a few years
ago. Well, that's a perfect example where they should be sent off.
Exactly, totally.
To
balance it out, it was a few years ago, there was a World Cup game which I think Kevin Keegan was the co-commentator. And this is the last I'm going to say on the subject of football, because I want to wake Kirby up at some point. The two players were running down the wing. One of them elbowed the other in the side of the face, knocked him stone cold out, and he could see in the slow motion that his eyes are glazed and he collapsed on the floor in a heap. And Kevin Keegan said, he's really putting it on there, look. And he had to be carried off the pitch and went to hospital with concussion. So that's part and parcel of this play acting thing, because sometimes you don't know when they're doing it and when they're not, you know. And I think it could be dangerous in some ways.
It's like the boy who cries wolf, isn't it?
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Situation.
Somebody's going to, you know, possibly die because of play acting at some point in the future. Very serious, that. So, like I say, Simon, it's...
Yeah.
Roberts. Excellent.
I haven't done one at all.
Yeah, all right.
For a change.
So, yes, a few months' time, there'll be a new Doctor and a new series of Doctor Who. We can't wait, can you?
To be honest, I'm quite tired of all the speculation. I'm a fan, and I just want to wait for it to open up. On a personal basis, I'd love it to go back to 48 shows a year.
Oh, but, yes, definitely.
That would just kill the actors now. What they
for
think.
Sure.
Yeah, be a new Doctor every year.
But, you know, yes, and I'm quite happy to wait and watch and see it all unfold. I personally, because the Series 6 was criticised for being too complicated, which, of course, it wasn't. But I like things to be slightly complicated, so you have to sit and think about it. I like the idea that you watch an episode and it's buzzing around in your head for the rest of the week until the next episode comes on. I love it.
Well, I like that, as long as you get a satisfactory, you know, conclusion or resolution. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we did, but we shall see.
No, I think we did in the end, yes. I'm not going to deny that. So forget about the current series. Of course, you're going to be a bit biased because you're going to have possibly a favourite Doctor. I might guess it being Matt Smith. So forget about the new era. What about the classic era? Who's your favourite Doctor from the classic era?
My Doctor is Patrick Troughton, and Matt Smith is my special Doctor. But I love them all. You know, I love them all. Yeah. I even love William Hartnell, but I was very young. I was 2 when it all started. So I have to admit that I don't quite remember the first episode, but I do clearly remember the back end of William Hartnell's tenure.
When you said back end, I imagined this like a pantomime horse. Sorry.
Yes, I thought as soon as I said it, I woke myself up. But towards the end of William Hartnell's tenure, I distinctly remember him changing to Patrick Troughton. And of course, I was of the age that this was still wonderful fantasy.
Yeah.
Yes. I loved John Pertwee. I was then of the age where I could understand more and question. Yeah. And I liked the stories. And Tom Baker was just completely off the wall. And I just loved that. Peter Davison then was the sort of, I saw him as a older cousin or an older brother type. It was just extraordinary. And I, contrary to what other people said at the time, I really liked Colin Baker.
Yeah.
I did too.
We loved Colin
Baker. And Sylvester McCoy, again, was wonderfully wacky, but with a sinister undertone.
And it just happened to stop when they were getting things right with, I think, his character as well.
No, I'm not going to disagree with that.
But of course, my joy is, I haven't met Tom Baker on the circuit, but I have met Tom Baker at a recording studio many years ago. So I can say I've met the guy.
Yeah.
And I've met all the others except, Christopher Eccleston, all the surviving ones, on the circuit. And they're all absolutely wonderful. Sylvester the McCoy was the first Doctor to actually come up and shake my hand and say hello and welcome to the madness that is conventions. So
nice, Steve.
And he insists on calling me Stephen. I keep on saying to him, Sylvester, my name is Simon. He says, yeah, but you look like a Stephen.
Well, that reminds me of Only Fools and Horses with Rodney and being called Dave by Trigger.
Yeah. My name's Simon. Yes, but you look like a Stephen. I've met him a few times, and so we bonded. And also, you know, as I say, I'm a fan who's got into the show, and it is a weird sensation that I'm at my desk getting myself ready for the show to open, and then Colin Baker will walk by and he'll wave at me, he'll go, "Good morning, Simon," like that, you know. And he's just, I have to pinch myself still.
Yeah.
You know, that's all. But it's absolutely wonderful, and long may it be so.
It's funny to say about Colin Baker, of course, because he's the only of the Doctors that's actually appeared on this show. Very briefly, but he still appeared on the show.
Very nice.
He did a sting for us. Of course, I'll be asking you to do a sting for us in a minute, if I can actually remember to do it, because we've had Andrew Cartmell on the show twice, and I've forgotten to ask him twice. So that's pretty good going, right, isn't it? As you probably guess, my memory isn't that good.
Well, the show must be coming to an end now, mustn't it?
Yes, it is. How did you get that? Guess that. I mean, this particular... don't worry, listeners. He means this episode of the show, not this show.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if my wife comes down and tells me off for talking too loudly, it could be the end of the show, full stop. So,
could be the end of your laptop.
Now. Anyway, yes. So thank you so much, Simon, for a bit. And stay on the line for the sting, or what they call it, bumper.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself.
I'm glad you have. I don't see how you managed to, but that's pretty good. I've had other people on the show who actually said they enjoyed themselves, and it clearly seemed to. Daphne Ashbrook came on for a second time. So it must be Robert's presence on the show must have some effect on people.
I don't know about that.
Anyway, yeah, so thank you, Simon. It's, it's been a bit of a long time in coming. I'm so glad that we finally got you on the show, and it's been a great fun.
Yeah,
yeah. Indeed.
So that was Simon Fischerbecker and the incomparable Robert Haynes, who has sort of announced that he's going to sort of cut back on his appearances on the show due to family commitments. And I just want to say thank you, Robert, for all you've done for this podcast. And hopefully at some time in the future, you might come back on a bit more often. But I'm sure that's not the last we've heard of him, because he has promised to send in some of his legendary, extremely long bits of feedback. So fingers crossed there. Right, I think we can do some news. And this time I won't get into any interruptions during the news, because there's no one here to interrupt me. Hooray! Okay, well, obviously last time we recorded was on the Sunday, so if I go back and look through what was on the news site since then, we have... BBC is offering fans the chance to take part in a special masterclass in Cardiff with Niall Gordon. I think that's Neil Gordon. I'm very good at reading. Director of Millennium FX and the man behind the creation of many of the monsters and aliens in Doctor Who. And the event is part of BBC Radio 4 Character Invasion, a project that will let people spend the day with the nation's best loved characters. On Saturday, the 29th of March 2014, writers' creations will take over the airwaves. So I'm sure people around the world can actually get Radio 4 via various mediums, so that'd be quite good. Series 8 update: the production has now begun on episode 5 of series 8, with two of the actors involved tweeting, "We are on our way." The episode forms the second story to be filmed as part of Block 2, directed by Douglas McKinnon, whose last story was the 2013 adventure Cold War. And it's been written by Steve Thompson, who returns to the series after writing two 11th Doctor stories, Curse of the Black Spot,
oh dear,
and last year's Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS. Writer Mark Gatiss has been talking about writing for the 12th Doctor, telling how Peter Capaldi has a very different energy to Matt Smith and David Tennant, and described his first episode as thrilling. That makes things all the very more exciting. Looking forward to the oncoming Peter Capaldi. Right, The Doctor, The I, Doctor and Me is a new book drawing analogies and parallels between the worlds of Doctor Who and Syrian conflict. And that book is available now by Abood Dandaki. What else we've got here? The Real History of Science Fiction, a new documentary series on the BBC Two and BBC America, will delve into the real history of science fiction with filmmakers, writers, actors and graphic artists looking back on their experiences and on how their obsession and imagination has taken them into the unknown. The Real History of Science Fiction will cover programs from Star Wars to 2001 A Space Odyssey and from Jurassic Park to Doctor Who. Each program is packed with contributors behind these creations and traces of the developments of robots, space invasion and time. And this is narrated by Mark Gatiss, Doctor Who writer, actor and co-creator of BBC's Sherlock. Among those taking part are William Shatner, Nathan Fillion from Firefly, Zoe Saldana from Avatar and Star Trek, Stephen Moffat from Doctor Who and of course Sherlock, Richard Dreyfuss, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Chris Carter from The X-Files, Ronald D. Moore, Battlestar Galactica, John Landis, An American Werewolf in London and Sherlock, David Tennant, Doctor Who, Christopher Lloyd, Back to the Future, Rutger Hauer, Blade Runner, John Carpenter, Dark Star and The Thing, Karen Gillan, Doctor Who, Neil Gaiman, Sandman and Stardust and some other programme, Kim Stanley Robinson, Mars Trilogy, Scott Bakula, Quantum Leap, Star Trek Enterprise. I tell you what, Scott Bakula has been in two of my favourite programmes there. Ursula K. Le Guin, The Left Hand of Darkness, Sid Mead, Blade Runner, Kenny Barker, Star Wars, Anthony Daniels, Star Wars, Nichelle Nichols, Star Trek, Peter Weller, Robocop, Edward James Olmos, Blade Runner, Battlestar Galactica, and many more. That was, it says and many more, but there was quite a lot to mention there, actually. So there's episode 1 is Robots, episode 2 is Space, episode 3 Invasion, episode 4 Time, and I can't wait to see it. So it sounds really, really good. Apparently it debuts in America on April the 19th, but BBC Two has yet to confirm a transmission date. Doctor Who Adventures 341 is out and has a picture of Strax. No, it's not. It's the Sontaran. It's the other one, played by Christopher Ryan, on the front cover. Planet 55 might leave Australia. The Australian animation company behind the recreation of Doctor Who stories has told the Australian Parliament it may need to relocate to the UK due to difficulties accessing broadband in the country. That's quite funny, really. Noted that there's no Australians here to answer that one. Actor Olaf Pooley has celebrated his 100th birthday, and he's better known to Doctor Who fans as Professor Stahlman from Inferno. And, well, congratulations to him. It's amazing. 100 years old. There's a horror channel in the UK is to broadcast 30 adventures from the classic series of Doctor Who starting this Easter. And it launches on the 18th of April, which is Good Friday. And it starts with an unearthly child and goes on to show the Mind Robber, Daemons, Genesis of the Daleks, Talons of Weng Jiang, Caves of Androzani, Attack of the Cybermen, and The Curse of Fenric. Keely Hawes has been cast in Doctor Who, and she plays Ms. Delphox, who, by the picture that's been posted, looks a bit like Kavarian, really. But, yeah, I like Keely Hawes, good actress. Utopia 27 is out now. It's a magazine, a fanzine, so that'd be quite good if you like your fanzines. A doodle by the Sixth Doctor, Colin Baker, has been auctioned for charity as part of National Doodle Day 2014. The event is to raise money for Epilepsy Action, with celebrities donating doodles to be auctioned on eBay. So look out for those on eBay. And Doctor Who LEGO proposal moves forward. As previously reported, in February, LEGO announced it would begin accepting proposals for Doctor Who LEGO sets. So that's going to be quite exciting. And I wonder if we're going to get a 12th Doctor figure set. Let's hope so. Apparently there's a Unit Fanual in the pipeline. It's entitled Unit Fanual 1974. Hey? I'm going to read that one. And what else have we got here? Matt Smith is to play for England in Soccer Aid 2014. Soccer Aid is the thing made by Robbie Williams, who basically it's a celebrity, a mixture of celebrities and professional ex-professional footballers who play England v Scotland, and people such as Michael Sheen, Bradley Walsh, and others have played in it. And Matt Smith is going to play for England, so that's something to look out for. That therefore concludes the news for this week's show, and concludes the show in total. So if you want to send in feedback, it's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. And if you are new to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, next week you'll be welcomed when we return to our usual format, of course, reviewing City of Death. So until then, thank you for listening to the show, and thank you, Robert, and thank you, Simon. See you later. Goodbye.
Word on the belt is you're looking for time travel.
Are you selling?
A vortex manipulator. Fresh off the wrist of a handsome tirated. I said off the wrist. Not cheap, Dr. Song. Have you brought me a pretty toy?
This is a Callisto Pulse. It can disarm micro-explosives from up to 20 feet.
What kind of micro-explosives?
The kind I just put in your wine.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.